I love a beautiful lawn. You love a beautiful lawn. Everybody loves a beautiful lawn, but they don't love how long it takes and how difficult it can be. And that is where True Green comes into play because it's the easiest and most affordable way to get that beautiful lawn. Let's be real. You've got plenty of other things to do in your free time than focus on your lawn care. So let True Green take care of all of that hard work while you get to do everything else that you want to do, like go play golf. Here's what you need to do. Visit truegreen.com, okay? It allows you to do you. Let them do the lawn care. And if you visit truegreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people, that is all guaranteed. You can trust True Green to give you the best lawn because they are the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. They offer a satisfaction guarantee and they have a verified best price promise, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. It's truegreen.com. Get started now.
First Cut. Golly.
Welcome to the First Cut Podcast. I'm Rick Gaiman, and this is your Masters recap episode. That's right. Joining me to break it all down, Kyle Porter is here. KP, what's going on, dude?
Not much. I feel like I was thinking about this on the way home. I don't know how these guys play 72 holes. I walked 18 each day, and I'm exhausted. I don't understand how you play it.
Can I tell you something? So I was at Harding Park a couple of months ago and I carried my bag and I was dead five holes in. I don't know how anybody does this. I don't know how caddies do it. I don't know how they do it. It was grueling. I was on the ground for weeks afterwards.
Yeah, we're soft, which is why we have a podcast and we don't. Well, it's one of a thousand reasons we have a podcast and don't play professional golf.
Yeah, that's the one reason. I just can't walk that far. Was there a media lottery this year?
Nope, no media lottery. Everything was different, but it was, you know, and I kind of talked about this earlier in the week. It felt invasive a little bit, being like myself being out there, because it felt like these pros kind of playing with the members on hand. And some volunteers, and I was like, well, what am I doing here? It was great, I loved it, but it was just, the whole thing was very, very strange throughout the week.
Yeah, I feel like we're gonna get so much, like, I don't know, it was just strange, and stories and things we never would have heard have been heard, and things we never would have seen have been seen. It's just like,
is there,
that's curtain a little bit.
Have you seen any like asterisk talk? Because I feel like this is the one major where it's like, oh, well, people not being there is really like, it seems like it matters more here than other places.
Man, if I see asterisk talk, I will block and report all of that. Like, that is, I mean, I get it, right? We talk all the time, the roars, the aura, everything that's going on, but that cannot possibly be a legitimate thought in anyone's brain, right?
Well, I asked DJ afterwards. I had a question in his presser. I said, do you think the patrons not being there helped or hurt you? So I wanted to force his hand. I wanted to choose one of them because we've heard Rory and Tiger talk about how it hurts. We've heard other guys talk about how it can help. And he said that he was like, if I have to choose one, it probably helped a little bit. And I think I would agree with that because, listen, like, it was awesome being out there. I got to go 36 with, I went like, I don't know, 60 of DJ's 72 holes throughout the week, but there was no juice. Like, there was not any, like, I this is dumb. I always get nervous during the Masters at a certain point in time, you know, depending on what's going on. I don't know why I get nervous, but I do. And I never, ever felt in any of that this year. And that, I think people would expect that, but it was just, it was a very different feel. And I think DJ's right. It probably helped him, but I don't know, man. Like, I think he's just does DJ stuff no matter who's there and kind of what's going on.
Yeah. Actually, Leon in the chat, so shout out to the chat, says the only asterisk should be for low scoring versus April, which is not actually that bad of an idea, right? In other sports, you get like, you know, since the live ball era or something like that. But do you think that we will look at the scoring? Like, there, I mean, we'll go through these. The records that Dustin Johnson put up this week are insane. Do you think we will look at them differently because this was played in November as opposed to April?
I don't think we will. Maybe we should. I don't think we will. It was so soft. Rory talked about this on, I think it was Sunday, how it's actually a disadvantage to guys like DJ and Rory when it's that soft, because you have to hit perfect shots when it's hard, when it's fast and firm, and they're like the best at hitting perfect shots. And so it's almost like it almost hurts DJ that it was that soft, I think. But it helped him on Sunday because he could kind of just protect the lead. Like he did, there was not a number out there other than, I guess, on 12 that, I mean, Tiger obviously showed us. But there weren't really numbers out there that, oh, he can make double here. It never really felt like that.
Yeah, especially with how in control his game was. So before we jump into DJ, remember, we are on YouTube and also available in podcast form. So if you have any questions or comments, you can drop them in the chat, or you can hit us up with them on Apple Podcasts in the review section. We will cover as many as possible. Dustin Johnson wins a November patronless edition of the Masters. He does it at 20 under par. Now only three golfers in history have reached 18 under: Tiger Woods in 1997, Jordan Spieth in 2015, and now Dustin Johnson this year in 2020. It was an absolute, I don't want to call it stressless because I wasn't in that position, KP. I thought maybe he felt the tiniest bit of stress on Sunday on number two when he chunks one into the front bunker and then he's got to get up and down out of there. But otherwise, it was a lot of fairways and greens this week, a lot of birdie opportunities, and the room never started spinning for him. You know what I mean? Like it never felt like it got out of his grasp.
Yeah, he played really smart, didn't he? Like he kept hitting like the three wood layup on 13 and he would just kept birdieing it. And I don't know, maybe if he makes a couple pars there, we look at that differently. It felt, I guess I don't really necessarily know why he did it. Maybe it was the wind, maybe it was the softness or whatever. I guess on Sunday, he was just protecting the lead on 13.
On his approach or on his tee shot?
On his tee shot.
Oh, okay. Because he laid up on 13, I think, right?
Yeah,
right?
He did. He did both days, Saturday and Sunday, which I thought was interesting. But it gets back to our conversation about, like, how do you play this course aggressively but still pick your spots? How do you combine, like, Bryson and Zach Johnson, right? you can't be – and I think Mark Immelman was really good on this, and he's right. Like, you can't just, like, be bombs away on every shot, but you also, like – If you're somebody like DJ, you want to take advantage of your length in some places. You know, the birdie on six was big. And then it was funny in his post round presser, he got asked about the chip on, or the chunk on two when he chunked it into the bunker. And somebody said, did you see the ghosts of past, something like that? He's like, I didn't see any ghosts, but when I got to the chip on three, I thought I better hit this solid.
he's the best
day answer, but he got it to the second nine. He's two up, and it was just, you know, he just kind of rolled from there. So I think the lasting image for me was on, he birdies 15 to get to 20 under, and the scoreboard operator on the scoreboard over 15 had opened up Cam Smith's numbers, and Cam Smith was the closest guy to him, and he was about to put the number in, and DJ turned away and just started walking to 16. And Austin, his caddy, said afterward that he didn't want to know the score. He was just staying in his world and kind of doing his thing. So I thought that was pretty interesting.
Yeah, that is pretty cool. First, now see, I learned something today, Kyle. I have a note here that DJ was the first wire-to-wire winner at the Masters since Jordan Spieth. However, someone told me that wire-to-wire means no ties after any round. Are you aware of this?
I would have said that it couldn't. Well, I don't. See, my wire to wire is you lead after every hole that you play.
Oh my God. But there's, how would you know? What if you tee off in the afternoon on Thursday?
Well, remember how we talked about that? Has
one hole at a time.
No. Has somebody ever led, like, teed off first and shot like a 30 and never trailed? That's a real wire to wire.
No, that's never happened.
That would be awesome.
First tee time out and then birdie the first and never give
it. You would almost have to do it at like a US Open where everybody tees off ahead of you and they're making bogeys to start. And then you tee off like pretty early, but you make a birdie and shoot like a 67 or something. I don't know. I don't know why we're talking about
this. I don't know. But anyway, so where I was going with this is I believe there have been five guys who have ever led by themselves after every single round. The latest to do that was Jordan Spieth, 2015. Dustin Johnson led or co-led after each round. I believe he's the 12th golfer to do that. So either way, very impressive stuff, historical context. I mean, we can go through some of the crazy things that we have here, right? I mean, he had the scoring record. I think he hit more greens in regulation than anybody. He's now under par in 9 of his 10 final rounds since the PGA. Like, I don't know where to stop on these stats. They're all just phenomenal stuff.
Yeah, they are. I saw somebody tweeted, it might have been Brendan Quinn of The Athletic. He had 1-3 putt this week, which we can talk about soft greens. We can talk about whatever. But 1-3 putt when you're contending for a Masters is pretty sick. I think it, for me, you know, I don't even know if it's the numbers. And this was kind of my column afterward is, and I kind of want to get into this because I want to get your take on it. Obviously the game is all time good.
Yep.
24 wins, Augusta, Oakmont. But I think he's like kind of transformed himself into this very earnestly likable athlete. And look, I don't know DJ. I've not been around him. He might be a psycho, but he's like this weird mixture of he's easy to feel sorry for because he's lost all these heartbreaking majors. But then also like you have guys. I had somebody talking to me today as we're watching DJ, and they're like, "Have you ever tried to walk like him?" He's like, "You look like an idiot." He's like, yeah, I know I would. He's like, "You're born with that." And so people also want to be him, right? And so he's also got all these gifts, but he's also pretty, like, works really hard and is kind of low-key a grinder a little bit. And then the post-round presser, like, breaking down and – like, I don't know. And maybe I'm way off on this, like, just out of my world. But he seems like he's become this very genuinely likable golfer.
Yeah, he's simultaneously a lovable loser and an all-time great, that's hard to kind of be both of those things. But you're right. I mean, listen, what we saw the interview with Amanda Baliunas afterwards was shocking. I was on HQ live and I saw it live on the first time on HQ, and they were like, react to this, and I was like, dude, I think I'm choked up. First of all, is the guy in our sport that we say is the most composed. He is the most emotionless. He is just like completely removed from result of anything, good or bad. And for him to like not even be able to form a sentence because he was so emotional and overwhelmed, it was awesome. Like it was cool. It was real. And it's a side of him that I've never seen before.
It was awesome. And it kind of, you know, we do this whole like, oh, DJ doesn't care. And like, it almost gives you a greater appreciation for the fact that his superpower is being able to put shots behind him, because he clearly does care. I mean, you don't react like that unless you care a lot. And I just feel like he's very, and this is a little bit of a Rory thing, he's become pretty comfortable in his own skin. Like he knows who he is. He just honestly, like, here's the deal, Rick. I think he just wants to go out and play a great round of golf every day. Yep. And like, how relatable is that? You know, his great golf is shooting 67 at Augusta National, which is very different than us, but I just think it's the most relatable thing in the world. And I thought it was, I don't know, man. I thought that moment was a really, really cool one.
And also think that, you know, whether he shows it or not, he has heard everybody and has gotten all the questions about letting all of these major championships slip through his fingers. And we've talked about him being, you know, snake bitten at times. And we talk about one win or one major win is great, but a second one is a lot of validation, right? It says that first one was not a fluke. And for the second one to come, for your validation victory to come at Augusta, which already amplifies it, and then Tiger Woods is the one slipping the green jacket on your very tall, broad shoulders. It was awesome. He could not have scripted that any better.
Yeah, if there were people there, it would have
been better. Sure.
he was asked about Tiger, and he was like, yeah, it was cool, but I don't really care who's putting the green jacket on me as long as I have it, which I thought was pretty hilarious. Look, I mean, you do the numbers. There's, I think, 142 guys who have won one major, and there's only 83 that have won two or more. So there's 225 total. 142 have won exactly one, and 83 have won two or more, and he's in the 83 now. And, I mean, that's, yeah, just numbers wise, it's a very different club than being in the 142. So I think that it's hard to envision him not winning more. You know, he's got, I was looking at his last, since 2015, 14 top tens, I think, and 22 majors, which is a joke, four runners up and now two wins, Augusta and Oakmont. The Augusta Oakmont club is also a joke. Jack.
Yep.
Hogan, Snead, Sarazen, DJ, and Angel Cabrera, I think it is.
I think you're right, yes.
So it's just, I'm glad, and we've talked about this, I'm glad that the Augusta Oakmont gives credence to him being an all-timer, because regardless of whether he wins Augusta, you're still, like, your talent is still all-time great. So I'm glad that he gets, like, the adulation from people who aren't really deep into this, into like some of the numbers and stuff, because I think he deserves it.
The group of even smaller. So you mentioned the guys who have won one major, the guys who have won two majors, there's only 17 to win a US Open and a Masters. So, I mean, we are getting into a very short list. I want to move on to some other guys, but real quick on DJ. I mean, you talked, like, and I agree with you. He's not done. Are we, first of all, I feel like the prime of his career has been very long, right? One win in each year for the last 13 years, I think it is now. The natural progression and evolution of his game from bomber to a guy who figured out his wedges that made him the number one player in the world, to a guy that now seems like he's figuring out the putter better than it's ever been. I'm scared for the rest of these guys on tour. DJ wins at kind of ridiculous rates, and I don't think he's close to done. This might be opening the floodgates.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting, because I don't disagree with you, but I also don't know that there was like a, I don't know the floodgates were necessarily closed, because sure. I didn't buy into the whole, like, he hadn't, you know, he can't close. It's like, I don't know. He shoots good numbers when he's leading at 54 holes. So sure. I think the primary takeaway there is, like, it's freaking hard to win these things, you know, like, it just, there's only so many, and he could think about this. He's a grounded club at Whistling Straits, and whatever that was, he hit at St. George's at 2-iron away from the slam. Like, but I mean, and not, the point is not that DJ should have won the slam. The point is, like, they're so hard to win. I think he ends with three, or maybe, I think he could get to four potentially. One last note on DJ. Rory said this after he played with him the first two rounds. They play a lot of practice rounds together. And he said, look, there's a lot going on there. And, like, mentally, he said, you guys make him out to be something. He didn't say these words, but essentially he was saying, you guys make him out to be something that he's not. He's smarter than you think. And I think that's really true. Like, I think that his evolution has been less physical because he's always been gifted, and it's been more the evolution of him mentally, getting to the place where we talk about his superpower being putting stuff behind him, not worrying about it, moving on, and yet still caring. Like we clearly saw after winning Augusta. So I just thought that was an interesting note from somebody who's played a lot of golf with him.
Yeah. I want to talk about Rory McIlroy, but first I want to remind everyone that they can win a 55-inch smart television. We're giving one away. Here's what you need to know if you'd like a chance to win. First off, the contest is completely free. To win, go to cbssports.com/firstcutgiveaway. That link is in the description of the episode if you're watching on YouTube, as well as in the podcast description on all podcast platforms. The contest does not end until November 23rd. So the winner will get to watch the next Masters, which is unbelievably only 5 months away, in crispy high definition. Couple of big names in the top 10, Kyle. One we've kind of had the natural segue to is Rory McIlroy. The first round woes played him out of this event on Thursday, despite shooting some of the best scores on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. He's going to finish T5, which we would say great result, looks awesome, but the way he did it, right? Like he leaves us wanting more because of the way he played over the final three rounds versus the way he played in round number one.
Yeah, what's crazy is that over the final three, despite how good he was, I think he still lost to DJ by two.
Yeah, that's crazy.
I presume he would have finished second if you just look at the last three.
Well, let's see here. Rory beat him by four there. Then DJ got him by two. No, Rory would have won by one.
Oh, really?
Yeah, right. 70, 65, and 68 for DJ, which is 70 plus 65 plus 68. 13. That's 203. And then Rory.
And Rory was 15.
And Rory was, no, 202. 202 to 203.
Yeah, okay. Okay. Yeah. You're right. So yeah, I mean there's the deal, right? Like I was actually trying to come up with scenarios for like how to just get Rory through the first round. Like, let Charlie Hoffman dress up in Nike gear, or somebody suggested playing it on Labor Day so you could play Friday through Monday instead of Thursday through Sunday.
So there is no Thursday Rory.
But it's so like it has to be absolutely maddening for him to go out, know how good you are at that course, play that well at that course, and then be derailed because you shot just a bizarre 75 in the first round. That was the easiest day of the tournament.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Every scoring record fell on Thursday, and Rory was three over par.
I was about one birdie away from running over to wherever Rory was at on Sunday, because his little mini run on the first nine came right as DJ was bogeying four and five. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, this is starting to feel like Spieth in 2018 a little bit. But yeah, it's got to be so just inherently frustrating to him to look at the way he can play there and then to look at his first rounds. He's got, what, two first rounds in the 60s ever, I think. And I mean, this year to go 75 and finish T5, I don't think anybody else in the top 20 shot anything close to that. So that's gotta be tough for him.
Corey Connors and Kevin Na were the only two golfers to finish inside the top 23 who were even over par on Thursday. And Rory's was the worst score. Here's an interesting comment from the chat. Toto Fun asks, does Rory need to make a change to a, quote, professional caddy rather than his mate? And I'm wondering if that is going along the lines of the fact that Rory's first round woes are mental. So the stats that back this up from Justin Ray are since in major championships since 2015, in round number one, Rory McIlroy now 28 over par. In rounds two through four, he's now 64 under. If it is mental, how does he fix it? I don't know.
Well, I mean, two things I would say to that. One, Dustin just won with his brother on his bag. And I thought
great point.
thought this was interesting. Austin talked about this. We interviewed him afterwards, and he said, look, like, I didn't really know what I was doing when I got out here. And I don't know if that's true of Harry Diamond, Rory's guy that's on the bag. I know he's a really good amateur player. Austin's a good player. But if you were going to do it, you wouldn't do it after like 4 years of having him on the bag, because invariably he's gotten good at the job. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not like, again, it's not like, you know, chemistry or like nuclear physics or anything. You're kind of like adding numbers up. It's more than that. That's unfair. But you know, the learning curve is probably 2, 3, 4 years. So you wouldn't do it after 4 years. You would have just not done it to begin with. That's kind of like the direction I would go with that.
Yeah. And obviously every golfer is different, right? Like what works for DJ might be different than what works for Rory and Spieth and JT and everybody. So you just got to find what's right for you. Speaking of Justin Thomas, we've said a couple of times this year, like, oh, this one is the one that he kind of let get away. I don't feel that way this time around. He shoots 71-70 on the weekend. He finishes 8 shots back of Dustin Johnson, but only 3 shots back of second. He's going to finish in solo fourth. He's really good at just putting himself in position. It sometimes feels like there's a lid on a cup, or he hit, you know, one bad swing and he has trouble kind of flipping the switch a bit, but he's just so good. He's so good.
You know, his trajectory at Augusta is interesting. I think he went like T37, T25, T17. Last year he was T12. This year he's T4, 3.
So yeah, solo four. So April is he wins.
I mean, that it's like what, and I think some of that is like just learning the place. You know, Shane Lowry had a really interesting quote where he talked about, hey, I wanted to make the cut because I want more competitive rounds here because I want to learn the place. Because someday I want to win here. And it's hard to win until you've learned more about the course. And that's just, we don't hear that ever. You know, guys go to like, no offense to Harbortown or wherever. And it's like, oh yeah, I don't know. I just went out there, played the course, shot a good score. But Augusta is different. And a lot of major championship courses are that you have to kind of learn what you're doing. And I wonder if that's where JT is at, is just trying to learn the different nuances of the course. I don't know. Maybe some of it is just physical, but it seems more mental than anything else with him. And I don't mean that in a bad way. It's just like learning how to kind of get yourself around that place.
Yeah. The rest of the top of this leaderboard, Cam Smith, 15 under, Sungjae Im, 15 under. I mean, Dylan Fratelli was in contention for a while. He was even par on Sunday. That's not going to get the job done. For Cam Smith and Sungjae, who played both so well, I don't liken this to a Phil Mickelson running into a Henrik Stenson buzzsaw at Troon, but like 15 under par and being 3 shots clear of the next group, right? They're 3 shots ahead of JT. That wins a lot of Masters, except this one where DJ goes out and breaks all the scoring records.
Do you have the strokes gain? Do you know what the
I could get it, but I don't have it handy.
Masters strokes gain is weird too, though, because like it's such a small field and you've got amateurs and 70-year-olds and whatever. Who I guess when I look at this top, we'll call it 10. So down to Webb, Corey Connors, and Patrick Reed. Who's the one that's the most surprising? Is it Cam Smith being second, or is it somebody else?
Surprising? yeah, I think it could be Cam Smith, right? I mean, here's a guy who has, I think he has 2 PGA Tour titles, right? One is a team event.
Yeah.
And one was Sony this year. And even though we liked him coming in, like it's a big difference when he's, you know, when we call him a sleeper and we go through the preview on Monday and everybody likes him and he's 66 or 100-1, you know, you're not actually expecting him to be the only guy in Masters history to shoot 4 rounds in the 60s, right? Like that's even exceeding all of those expectations. So yeah, I think I could go with Cam Smith there.
He's played well there before.
Yeah.
He finished in the top, I think, 5 at the US Open at Chambers Bay. He felt a little Danny Willett-ish in that, like, oh, he's having a really good Masters, but he's probably going to get clipped by this guy who's an all-timer. And if the all-timer makes an 8 on 12, then maybe he wins, right? But it doesn't feel like, and this could be wrong, but it doesn't feel like he's like building on something where he's going to start top 10-ing at all these major championships.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, so all right, so let's transition that conversation to Sung J.M., who I would argue does feel like he's building on something, right? I mean, the trajectory of his career from Corn Ferry Tour, where he was what, their player of the year, regular points winner or whatever, to rookie of the year, to PGA Tour winner at the Honda Classic, to now finishing second at the Masters, and he's 22 years old. That trajectory feels a little bit different.
I mean, think of, we would be freaking out if this was like Matthew Wolf, right?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
I mean, I guess we kind of were when he finished top five at the PGA and US Open. Sungjae was great this week. I didn't necessarily see that coming in. I like him. I think he was awesome at the beginning of 2020. He hadn't been great recently. He wasn't in my top three or four of first time guys playing that I expected could win. I think Morikawa, Wolf, and Scheffler all ahead of him. He's really good. He hit the ball just off the tee, he was awesome. And, you know, I was talking to Ryan Lavner of Golf Channel about this. We were watching him on Sunday. His short game was really impressive. Now, I think that he was a little bit helped by some of the softer conditions, because I don't know that his iron play is necessarily like – I mean, I know it's not DJ level. So I do think there was a little bit of that there. But, man, he should be encouraged by finishing 15 under at his first Masters.
Yeah, he was actually a lot better, results wise, a lot better before the shutdown. That's when he won in Honda. He finished third at API. Then he had trouble finding it again after the restart. He had a couple of events that he popped up at. But this obviously his best finish. He goes as far as kind of when he's flushing it, he's on. And then that short game, I mean, he had a couple of up and downs around there that I was like unbelievable stuff. So we'll see.
The ones that I remember, 6 was incredible, even though I think he missed the putt.
He did miss the putt, but it was still right.
And then 15 was sick.
Yeah. 15 is the one that I'll think of like, holy crap. How did he do that?
My most surprising in the top 10 is the bread man, CT Pan.
Yeah, that would be a surprise too. Okay, so he's a shorter hitter, and we can talk about this later, but like Bernard Langer can't move the ball out there. CT Pan, Mike Weir makes the cut. I mean,
real quick, let's not use Bernard Langer and Mike Weir as evidence that the game's in a great position, that there's nothing we need to do about distance. That is the most nonsensical. Do you want to say something? I feel
no,
like I'm
no, no, no. I'm soaking this in. I'm enjoying this. Please.
It's nonsense. It's like one of my friends who I don't know if he wants this out there, but I'll keep it secret. Said that's like when it snows, saying, "Oh, there's nothing wrong with, there's no global warming. There's nothing wrong with the atmosphere." And it's true. Like you can't use one person. I saw so many people talking about this. Like, that is not the point. And we'll get to Bryson in a minute, but like Bernard Langer, great for him. He's 63. He's became a grandfather. He's like making the cut in the Masters. That's phenomenal. It's not evidence that the game is not broken, that we're going to be unable to go to some of these classic courses because of how far the golf ball is going. That's not what it is. So let's stop talking about that.
Also, the flaw in that is both of these guys are Masters champions. And this is the course that we say experience and knowledge goes such a long way. So it's not just like being able to bomb it out there. So they are pretty, pretty poor examples if that's how you want to deploy them.
And also DJ, maybe the longest guy ever, set a new scoring record this week.
Yeah, DJ moves it out there pretty good. Not just Bryson. Just to round out this top 10, so just the notables here, DJ, Justin Thomas, Rory McIlroy, Brooks Koepka, John Rahm, Webb Simpson, Patrick Reed, all finished in the top 10. That's some star power.
Yeah, it's It's legit. Webb's had a great last few Masters. You know, he quietly finished T5 last year, T10 this year. I think that I'll take away, and I said this on our podcast earlier in the week, his quote about respecting the course a lot is something that I'll take away from this week, not just for him, but just sort of kind of the way that I think about Augusta National. So yeah, just another awesome Masters. We get 144 days until we do it again.
I love it. I want to talk about the defending champion, Tiger Woods. I want to put a bow on Bryson DeChambeau, but first we're going to take a quick break and hear a word from our partners.
The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. And that's because the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe has some great features like the available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads, and much, much more. So think about those places that you want to go, the things that you'd like to do this weekend, and where the Santa Fe can take you. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
And we're back. Shortest break ever if you're watching us live stream on YouTube. Tiger Woods, Kyle. He had a full week. You know, he went out in 4-under 68 on Thursday. He had the long day on, I guess that would have been Saturday, where he had to finish round two, play the entirety of round three. He nearly holes out for eagle on number two on Sunday with a beautiful flop shot. And then he gets to number 12. And he does something he has never done in his entire career. And he takes a 10 on a hole.
So here was my experience of Tiger's 10. I'm out with DJ and Sungjae, and poor Abraham Answer. He had a tough day.
That was tough. Yeah.
That was difficult. I really like Answer, by the way. But so there's only members out there, members and their spouses, some media members, some volunteers, and another media member came up to me and said, "Hey, Peyton Manning just said." So Peyton Manning's, I guess he's a member.
Interesting.
I think that's what his badge said. I don't know if that's.
Is that like honorary or is he like actually a member?
I think he's actually a member. I guess. I don't know why else he's not a volunteer and he's not a media member.
Could you imagine Peyton Manning doing the laser and like writing stuff down as a volunteer?
So Peyton Manning was like locked into DJ. And he was taunting one of the guys I was with. He had a Georgia, like a University of Georgia mask on. Mm-hmm. And Peyton was like, "Yeah, I threw up all over that thing."
That's so cool.
Anyway, somebody said, "Hey, Peyton just said that Tiger made a 10 on 12 because Peyton had his phone out there," which I don't know. I don't know what was going on.
Different but rules for different guys, I think.
Definitely different than the rules that, yes. And so Tiger made a 10, and I was like, there's no, he must have like looked at it wrong. He doesn't.
Or it's Peyton Manning. He's messing with you. He's a, you know, right. Funny guy.
Oh, he was like locked into everything all week. It was really cool to see. Like some people are out there, you know, normally, and they just want to be seen and what he was like locked into Sungjae Im iron play. It was phenomenal. But so that was how I experienced it. And then I get back and I look up Tiger's card and I was like, he made a 10 on 12. What? Walk me through it.
All right, here we go. Off memory. Steps up to 12, addresses his ball, backs off, trying to figure out the wind, hits the first one into the bank, rolls it into Ray's Creek, goes to the drop zone, lands it on the green, spins it back into Ray's Creek again. Takes his next shot over the back into the back bunker into a very awkward situation where he is like full one leg up on the side of the bunker just trying to get it out of there, skulls it out of the bunker, back into Race Creek. Takes a drop in the bunker, plops it out onto the green, however many that is, two putts later, 10.
It's never good when you're dropping in the bunker for seven.
Never good. Someone was like, that's the most relatable Tiger Woods has ever been. And I'm like, no, it's not. I would have picked up well before I got to 10. No chance I take a 10 on that hole.
And also, I made a 4 on 12.
Nice.
With the Sunday pin. So not relatable at all.
The crazy thing is, so first of all, I mean, Justin Ray had all the great stats, like the highest score he's ever taken on any hole, 23,000 holes or whatever he's played on the PGA Tour.
I did see that. That was great.
And then he does something, which he's also never done, Kyle, which is birdie 5 of his last 6 at Augusta National. And I'm just sitting here like, did you always have that in you today? Like, is this what we could have seen this week? Like, I don't know how a guy goes from making a 10 on 12 to birdieing 5 of his last 6 and looking like he's untouchable.
Yeah, it is weird. He had a weird week. Thursday was definitely signs of life. And then over the last couple of days, you're kind of like, I don't know. It just feels like 2019 was kind of this last hurrah. It's so hard for him to put together 4 days of it when his game is, I don't see it. And maybe that flips in 2021, 2022, whatever, but he's getting older, like probably not. And so you've got all that. And then you've got a 10, and then sort of a microcosm of it is a 10 and then 5 birdies. And you're like,
yeah,
well, that's just like, is that just what we're getting, is like some good and then some really bad and then some good again and then some really bad? That kind of feels like what the deal is.
Right. And I feel like it's getting more and more difficult for him to give us the good or at least the okay for 4 straight days. That's the thing, right? And now, you know, we're, what'd you say, 140 something days from the April version of this, right?
Yeah.
I mean, what's he going to play before that? He'll play Torrey. Like there is no Hero World Challenge this year. Like, might be a while before we see him again.
He might play Players. He'll play Riviera.
Yeah.
And
Players.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't really know if I have a ton to add. He's just kind of good, but not great, but still Tiger at certain places like Augusta, you know.
Earlier in the week, he was like Thursday and Friday, even Friday when he wasn't playing as well, he was outthinking everybody. He was like 2 shots better just with where he was leaving his ball, and like you could tell the game wasn't there. So when you get to places, and I guess he really only plays a lot at places he's won a bunch, whether it's Torrey, whether it's Augusta National, like he's going to gain a stroke with his brain every single round.
Well, and he doesn't want a shootout. Like, you want to get into a shootout with like DJ and JT and Rory, like good luck with that. You know, he wants, and this is almost why I wonder if an Open is going to be where he competes the best over the next 5 or 6 or however many years we get out of him, because you can get into an Open and it's kind of weird, and you don't have to hit, you know, depending on the venue, you don't have to hit just these DJ like shots. You can kind of work your way around a little bit and outthink people. And it, this week, just with how soft it was, that was not going to happen. He was going to have to get into a shootout, and that's just, I just don't know that that's where we're at with him right now. That could flip, but right now I don't think that's where we're at.
Producer Jacob, if you were watching on the live stream, put up the shot tracker for the 10, which is like unbelievable stuff. Go check that out. Let's put a bow on Bryson here, because he was the betting favorite coming in. He told us par was 67. He then told us he was dizzy at times. I don't know if what the health issues were. The driver didn't work. The driver was not good enough. The one thing that he told us was going to bring Augusta National to its knees was not good enough.
Yeah, it wasn't. I didn't see much of his weekend stuff. I mean, the years of success, he won the US Open, right? Like, I think that, and we kind of talked about this beforehand, and I've hollered about it all week. Like, this is not going to work every tournament. Like, he's not going to win ever. And JT said this. He goes, look, no offense to him, he's not going to win every time he plays, you know? And I want to go back. Mark said something on, I think, Friday, and I agreed with it at the time, and I still do to an extent, but I also disagree with it as well. He said, pretty much, if you look at every champion here, they've all played from the same positions off the tee. And I was thinking about that, and I was like, oh, okay, that kind of – but then I started thinking about, like, Tiger in 97, right? Those were not positions that Ben Hogan won the Masters from. Those were not positions that Seve Ballesteros won the Masters. I mean, they freaking lengthened the course.
Right.
You know? And so I think that there's something there with Bryson. I mean, obviously, he's playing – I mean, he finished top five at the PGA. He won the U.S. Open. It didn't work this week. That means – zero to me. That means nothing. If anything, the fact that he made the cut playing like he did is actually a testament to what to his strategy. But I do think that there's something about Augusta, and this is the part that I agree with Mark on, where you can't just try to murder every hole. You have to pick and choose what you're trying to do. And I don't know. I don't when Bryson does he kind of goes back and looks at everything. I wonder what his takeaway is about, okay, well, my strategy on this hole can't be that. It should be this. I mean, because a couple of times he played 13, you're like, oh my gosh, he got 124 in. He almost made an albatross.
Yeah. I'm very interested. Okay. So I'm glad we're only 5 months out from April version of this, because I want to see the strategy that he deploys in April and see if it's any different. Because listen, it's one thing, like, we don't know for the most part what guys are trying to do a lot of the time, but to see what clubs he uses off of certain tees, I think will be interesting. You know, he's going to tinker, you know, he's going to evolve in the next 5 months. Like, I don't know if he's just going to try to run this back and hit the same shots and just try to hit them straighter and try to do it better, or if he's actually going to not try to murder every single hole.
Well, and DJ is an interesting case study, because he's the second longest guy on tour, the third longest, whatever. But he also picked his spots really well, really, really well. And he didn't, you know, he didn't go for the world on 15. He didn't try to burn down 13. And he just kept the momentum going in the right direction. And I think that's where Bryson almost, I think sometimes he tries to win the tournament on one hole. And you're like, dude, you got 70 more of these. Like, let's settle down. So I'm with you. I think any adjustment, what he's doing is the way to do it. But I wonder what adjustments. I don't think there will be that many, honestly. I think there will be some, but I don't think there will be as many as maybe people would imagine at Augusta National.
Last thing on him. I think number 13 for the week is the perfect microcosm, right? That was the hole that, coming into the event, we were like, oh my God, where is he going to hit it? He's going to cut the – it's going to be wild stuff. It's going to be insane. Makes a double on Thursday. Birdies it on Friday, pars it on, what would that be, Saturday, and almost makes a two and makes an eagle on Sunday. He plays it at one under. So, like, on the surface, one under on 13 is not what Bryson was going for, but it goes to that whole, like, range of outcomes things, right? He's going to expand the range of outcomes to the extremes. And sometimes that's going to backfire, and sometimes it's going to be awesome.
Well, and that's what was so remarkable about what he did at Wingfoot, is he didn't bring those huge numbers into play. You know, like, yeah. he was just so – I think, honestly, is it as simple as, like, he just hit driver a lot better at Wingfoot than he did at Augusta National?
It might be. I mean, I don't – you know, we don't get, like, the full strokes gain numbers and all that stuff, but we could go back and look. I mean, it just felt like he was all over the place with the driver this week.
Terrible off the tee. I mean, and he got – a couple of bad breaks and whatever, but I just don't know that you completely, like, go back to the drawing board on it. I think it's just, hey, hit driver better, because that's what you do, you know? So I don't know. I'm with you. And look, you know, people, like, as we were following DJ around, were like, I'm ready to be done with Bryson. I'm like, I can't get enough. Like, this is the best.
Yeah, man. He was prime time viewing every single time he put his club behind the ball. Great. Unbelievable. All right, KP, 2020 Masters in the books. Any final thoughts, anything that we did not talk about?
No, I'm just glad it happened. You know, I saw the chairman of Augusta National, Fred Ridley, was walking around with Rory's group and with DJ's group on Sunday, and everybody was just kind of thanking him for just putting it together, because it would have been easy to just not do it. And it wasn't, it was very different. You know, the juice wasn't there on Saturday and Sunday. It felt different. But it was awesome that it happened. And I'm glad DJ won. I think DJ is freaking all time. And I think he's so, he's become so easy to root for. And we had a great major season. How about that? Morikawa, Bryson, DJ. That's awesome.
That's really, really good. I'm glad you were there to take it all in, to be our eyes on the scene. Oh, how about this? The lines are already out for the 2021 Masters. The sun has barely set on this one.
Let me guess. I think Bryson's still the favorite.
He is the co-favorite with Dustin Johnson. Yes, they are both 7-1.
Wow, 7.
7.
That's a that's a pretty low number. We used to see Tiger in like the 3 and 4.
Yeah.
What's Rory, 9?
Rory's 9. Rahm is 10, along with Justin Thomas. So those are the big 5. And then there's a bit of a gap down to Brooksy at 16. And Xander, who, you know, we didn't spend a lot of time talking about this week because he kind of just hovered around. Xander's at 20.
Okay. Xander at 20 is interesting.
Yeah, I might have to get on that before he, like, because if he wins anything between now and then, like, this number is definitely getting much shorter than that.
Yeah, for sure.
Where did he finish this week? T17. Yeah, 67, 73, 71, 70.
Him and Brooks were kind of just sort of there, but not, I mean, it was a little, Rory got a little closer, but none of those guys were ever, like, really, really in it. It didn't feel like.
No, it didn't. It didn't. Cool. All right.
Awesome stuff.
I think we've done it. Great week. Kyle Porter, thank you very much. You can find him on Twitter at Kyle Porter CBS. Producer Jacob behind the glass with all the good stuff this week and every week. You can find me at Rick Run Good. This has been The First Cut, and we'll catch you next time.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast wherever you get your podcasts.